Thank you, Nipun bhai, for calling me here. I see a lot of sincere and good people sitting around and meditating for a long time. It's not easy even to sit for an hour. Yeah. In fact, one of the tests in ancient times for a student was if he could sit without wriggling his toes for an hour before you start anything else. So anyway, you call this what space? Service space. I think service space could be called another word you can use is sacred space, because I don't see a distinction between service and sacredness. I think, first of all, the space has to develop. Space, which you put second, is perhaps the most important thing, because that space is required for anything at all. Once we are full, then nothing can be added on. So, space is humility, it's the understanding that we don't know which is space, and so on. Anyway, you asked me about a particular part of my autobiography where I have... Babaji said this, of course. My guru said this. But my guru at that time, not the guru whom I refer to in the autobiography most of the time as Babaji, was my personal guru, Maheshwarnath. But remember that the autobiography starts with a story. It's not so much as if it's happening now in this life. This is what you're talking about. Well, this, for those who haven't read, it's a story about... Namaskar. I didn't see you. It goes like this. It's like...
Which me?
Well, the story is about somewhere in the Himalayas, near, now that I haven't written it, but it's close to Pandukeshwar. There is a family who has settled down there for many generations, from very orthodox Samavedins who've settled down there. And in that family, there is a young man who, from the beginning of his, from childhood, is more interested in going deeper into meditation and touching the space, rather than the scholarly achievements of his father, grandfather, and so on. And since this family is known to a great being in the Himalayas, I am especially using the word being, because I do not think this being we deal with is been born in somebody's womb and is like us. Nobody like us can live for 1,000 years or so. It's not possible with this physical body, whatever we do. So this person whom we, well, for the first time, when Yogananda Paramahamsa, Swami Yogananda Paramahamsa, wrote the autobiography of a yogi, he has also not written anything about the genesis of this person. Bear in mind, he referred to him as Mahavatar Mahamaj, because people, many manifestations have come and gone, and somebody is there for a long time. So, Maha, big avatar. But for hundreds of years, this particular being is known in different traditions as Sri Guru Babaji. We also refer to him as Sri Guru Babaji. the Nath Sampradaya, which is primarily responsible for saving yoga from being completely overtaken by pure philosophy. Starting from Adinath, Mashendranath, and so on. Gorakhnath is the most famous person among the Nathpantis. And most of his texts are even today read as the kind of a curriculum for the Nath Sampradaya. And Gorakhnath's most famous work is the Siddha Siddhanta Paddhati. There's a lot of learning. It's boring in a way, but very interesting. It needs a lot of... You have to have a teacher to sit down and learn the Siddha Siddhanta. Then there is, of course, the simpler Goraksha Shataka, the Garanda Samhita, the Shiva Samhita. These are all Nath Sampradaya, including the Yoga Pradipika of Swatma Rama. Some people call it Hatha Yoga Pradipika, but I would stick to Yoga Pradipika. I can't distinguish between Hatha Yoga and any other yoga. So this great being, who most of the Nath scriptures open with Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah, and Gorakhnath says also Om Nityanathaya Namah. That means that Nath who is there forever, which is a reference to Babaji, of course. So this young man I talked about, who came from this family of Samavedins, was at a very young age, since Babaji was frequently visiting their place on his way to the Badri and so on, became his disciple. He found that this guy is good, so let's take him in. So he was trained. I mean, this is a story, okay? After a great deal of training, when he could attain or achieve higher levels of consciousness, when he could sit down in Padmasana and go into a deep trance for long periods of time and reach. One day, while he was sitting on the banks of the river and in deep meditation, another character appears in that area. He is actually a Sufi practitioner whose guru, in the Sufi system they don't say guru, they say sheikh or teacher or murshid. He, on his deathbed, he said, "Whatever I have given you, whatever I could give you, I have given it to you. Now you go to such and such an area in the Himalayas. You'll find a very young yogi there. He should be your guide from now on. Learn from him whatever you have to learn." See, look at this. Two completely different traditions in one way. Okay. That's why I believe that the depth is more important than the traditions. Doesn't mean you have to shift traditions. Each person, it may be suitable, right? So anyway, this old Sufi guy, after days of traveling, he doesn't even know where this... Finally, he finds, you know, he's almost on the verge of death. He's so tired and his clothes are torn. He appears there. And then he finds this young man. And he has been given some signs to recognize him. So he's sure, here is this person who is going to be my teacher. He's looking very young. So at that time he must have been around 20 years old. So he comes and, you know, in his eagerness and his desire for finding and his excitement that he has found somebody he was seeking, forgetting that this guy is in a trance, he... you know, and says, "I've come, please wake up." And I haven't gone into so many details in the autobiography because the editors kept saying, "Cut, cut, cut." So, So he's sitting there, and then he opens his eyes and he sees this Muslim guy with a long beard and, you know, torn clothes, looking very dirty and so on. And he's very upset that when he had reached the Vishuddha, somebody has brought him down. So he gets, who on earth are you? Why have you come? He doesn't, if he had only thought for a second and opened the faculties which he had, he could have found out. Anger overtook. Anger also, because he said he suddenly remembered his lineage, where he comes from. And also the spiritual lineage, where he comes from. And his family. And who is this guy coming and touching me? I just had a bath, you know. So he says, I don't want to do anything with you. So this guy says, but I was told by my master that you are the guide, so you have to help me out. He said, I can't do anything for you. Get lost. Because he wants to go back to his... One pointed, of course, in one way. Can't blame the poor fellow. Anyway, I'm not justifying it. So this man says, if you don't guide me, teach me now, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to commit suicide. Jump down the rocks into the river. He says, you can jump, you can go where you want. I don't care. Go, I want to meditate. So this man actually does what he has threatened to do. He jumps down the river and he's dead. Body is carried by the water. And then his guru appears, and he's the only man who calls him Madhu, so he knows who has come. So he said, Babaji, what have you done? Is this years of spiritual growth that you have touched? Your energies have touched the Vishuddha, but you have no kindness in your heart. Is this the movement to spiritual development? Could you even just find out why he came? Could you let anger overtake you? Where have you reached? One good thing, that's where the teacher says to the person, one little good act is equivalent to 100 years of tapasya. Because finally, when one touches that, all teachers have only talked of compassion. You may not be able to touch it straight, but when you touch it, that's what you learn. That compassion is the most important thing. So how much have you developed? Nothing has happened. So because his master says so, he realizes his mistake. And he says, I'm sorry, I did a terrible crime. I admit it. So what am I to do now? Can you get me out of this? Can we do something about that man? He says, don't bother about that man. No, I take care of him. He becomes one of the intimate friend of little gang of disciples who are with me all the time. So I've got his soul. Don't worry about it. Body is gone. Okay. But you have to come back again. Be born under circumstances where you know what happened to this guy. So this young man says, I'm ready to do whatever you say. So then he says, commit the thing which we, Babaji used to jokingly call spiritual suicide, which means sit in your padmas and shut off all bodily actions, do the Khechiri Mudra and get out. So he left his body, and he thought he was lost. Until, because he had taken a promise, that I'll do whatever you say, but please don't let me off. Catch me somewhere, hold me. So Babaji, his guru, Babaji said, Tathastu, so be it. So he came back, and he had to be born in a particular circumstances where he realized the difficulties of all this. And then at the age of 9, Babaji sent his man, go pick up the fellow, he's there somewhere. So in this context, Babaji had said that one act of kindness is equivalent to 100 years of tapasya. So this is what you were asking. Who this boy is a mystery, doesn't it?
If you read the book, could that be. Boy was him.
Could be anybody.
A lot of your teachers instructed you, or not a lot of your teachers told you to come back and lead a householder life. But they also told you to go visit different organizations, right, and different religious, right, groups, spiritual groups. And you have met so many people. What would you say was something that is common across all these great souls and spirits that you met?
One thing I noticed among all these great teachers, whoever I have met, is that they were not cultists. We don't belong to a cult. There were people who said, this is our path, this is the other teacher's path. All are making spiritual progress in their own way. And it cannot be that the same path will suit everybody. It's not possible, because we are all made differently. Right? And therefore, if you need help from us in some way, we are ready to give you. That doesn't mean that you need to convert. I've met many teachers about whom I've written, as well as many who I have not written. Some short while and some for a longer period of time. And I have found that one thing that distinguishes a great spiritual teacher is they are transparent. They don't say one thing and do another. And they're kind. They're kind and compassionate. And three, they believe that there must be different ways to the truth. Ours is not the only one. Provided that it consists of some kind of purification of the mind. See, even in the Vedanta, even in the teachings of Vedanta, you know, people think, when you say Vedanta nowadays, everybody thinks only of Shankaracharya, Adi Shankara, Advaita philosophy. Vedanta is very big, and so many. In fact, in India, unfortunately, if you say Vedanta, people don't ask you any questions. They think, oh, Vedanta, Shankara, okay. But once, many years ago, I happened to go to Harvard, and in the philosophy department, and a small few people were there, were some professors also. So I said, now according to Vedanta, so one of the professors stood up and said, sir, which Vedanta are you talking about? Are you talking about Madhva's Dvaita? Are you talking about Ramanujacharya's Vishishta Dvaita? Are you talking about Shankara's Advaita? All this is Vedanta, believe me. All this is Vedanta. So even in one thing called Vedanta, there are so many approaches. And they may be needed for people of different categories and different stages of evolution. In the same way, if there was only one way, then this supreme energy would have found a way to make only one way. The very fact that there are many ways existing proves that there are many ways to the truth. So this is one thread that I found in all great spiritual teachers. They would not say somebody is wrong. They would say, if you pursue it for a while and figure out for yourself. So, having met so many people, what I have found among them, which you can say is a common strand, is one is humility, clarity in thought, no hypocrisy. Above all, kindness and compassion. And a commitment to take you to a spiritual level and not to take anything from you. This commitment is very important. As you said, we'll start from the iconoclast like Krishnamurti and come down to, I'm not saying down in the sense of up and down, I'm saying start with somebody who breaks all images or tries to at least, and then to great monks of the Ramakrishna order who have a certain, even though Swami Vivekananda was a great iconoclast, but he did have that's a certain structure to it. I've met senior monks of the Ramakrishna order. I've lived with Maheshwaranath Babaji, who was from the Nath Sampradaya, which is in a way quite caught up in certain forms and structures. In fact, the Nath Sampradaya, traditionally, you have to puncture your cartilage and put two rings here. So they're called kanphatas, those whose ears are torn. Babaji did not ask me to do that. He said, it's not required for you. He said, can you imagine going in the modern world with these things hanging in your ears? He said, in fact, following the custom, I had to wear rings, of course, kundalas. You can still see the holes. But Babaji said to take it off. He said, there's no need to distinguish. Sometimes I put it on, sometimes I take it off. So, what I mean is, I didn't find any rigidity in many of these great teachers. There's no rigidity. And then, of course, I had the great opportunity on the other side of meeting His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, personally. I don't know whether we could go into this, but it's the same impression that I have. Greater, in the sense that, you know, he came to Delhi for the teachings and I had not started my walk. So I decided, so let me go and meet him, try to meet him. So, done. So he was waiting. You know one thing, the greater you become, the humbler you become. I've seen this in many people, including Krishnamurti. So, in the hotel where they were having, in the banquet hall, they were having the empowerment. So I met him before that. So he was, there was no need, that's what I'm trying to say. I'm nobody in some way. He was standing with his assistant, another monk, at the door of the room when I came. This is not required. I told him, this is not... He said, no, come. And we walked inside. I said, I need 10 minutes with you because I'm going on this walk and I came to take your blessings and your advice also on this. For 2 minutes, he tried to persuade me not to walk. Really? You really want to walk? It's so long, this is why I walk. Is it 7,000 kilometers? No. Sit down. You'll see the picture. There's a sofa and he's sitting here and I'm sitting here. And I was sitting like this. He said, relax. Then we had a beautiful discussion about various things and finally he said, okay, So I gifted him a copy of my autobiography. He said, sign this, because I have a book for you, I've signed it. And so I signed it. He took it and put it on his head. I have a picture of that. And then he put it down, and I was completely, I don't know what to say, I was just sitting there. And then he said, well, we discussed various. He says, look, you know, I can't walk. I said, I know. Knees are in bad shape. And then I took off my shoes. He said, look, I'm not taking off. I said, it doesn't matter. So then we had a chat of various things, something on the verge of philosophy. So when we touched that, I said, Your Holiness, I think now you have let me walk. So he said, yeah, I invoke all the bodhisattvas and I have gone to be with you. Walk. Okay. And he asked me if I was going via Dharamshala. I said, no. Oh, okay, he said. Then I thought it's time to go, because there were so many people walking out, waiting outside, including diplomats. And so I said to him, he said, where? He said, with a strong hand, you know. So I sat down. He said, you know what, I wanted to talk to you about something. I said, yes. I was actually quite thrilled that he wanted to discuss with me. So he said, I heard from Rajiv Mehrotra that you are very deep into Upanishads. I said, not so deep into, but okay. He said, that's good. Then he said, so tell me, what Upanishad do you like most? I said, nothing like that, but my Upanishad, which I learned over and over with Babaji, with my guru, was the Kena Upanishad, because the word itself means who. It starts with who. So can there be a 2000 years ago an Upanishad called a who Upanishad? Who on earth are you? Who the hell are you? So that was my... So I told him it's the Kena Upanishads. And he said, he said, right. So what does it say about the Supreme Truth? So I said, I knew kind of what he was trying to say. So I felt, so I said, Yan manasa namanyute yana hurmanomatam tadeva brahmatvam vidvi nedam yad idam upasati. This is a terrible statement from the Upanishad. That means that which even the mind cannot reach, because of which the mind owes its existence to. Know that alone is the truth, nothing that you worship here. This is from Shruti. Kena Upanishad, Samaveda. So he said, that's what I want. So the mind cannot reach there. I said, no. Then what is it to do with us? Well, then I'm not interested in the Brahman, because the mind is my only instrument. If the mind cannot reach, so what happens? I have nothing to do with it. I said, Your Holiness, it means the ordinary mind. He said, yes, then you should say that, the ordinary mind. Right, I understand. Now I understand. Yes, the ordinary mind cannot reach there. So then there was some other discussion on Shunyata and Purnata. The Buddhist concept is Shunya. I was saying that Shunya is not different from Purna, which is completeness. Get it? Shunya is called Shunya because there is no word to describe it. There is no way you can understand it with the limited mind. Yes, I am now very careful of. So he went on, then finally I took leave and he came up to the door and went away. See, this is one example of a great person, of a great being, someone who has also not only spiritual but temporal head of a state and so on. And Tulku, reborn, Rinpoche. This is on this side, but here Buddhism has various orders and hierarchies and rituals. Look at Krishnamurti on the other hand. Nothing is there, right? Nothing. Am I good? Taking too much time?
No.
we feel like we're under a tree. Listening to our grandfather.
So, I wish there was a tree. As Krishnamurti. You know, one day, I spent the last few years of his life, I was close to him. I went to one of the talks in the headquarters, which is Vasant Vihar in Madras, in Chennai. One talk he said, throw all your holy books into the sea. There's nothing in them. So I got a little worried about this. So and because I was so much into Vedas and Upanishads. So then the next day he said, you know, you must understand this, I was 24 and a half. And then he said, and he was a man who was nearly 90. And the next day he said, you know something, I have not read any of these books. So I said, no, this is a contradiction. So I can't let go, but I can't do it in public because there were so many people. So in the evening, in those days he had some knee pain, so I was supposed to take an Ayurvedic oil for him, for his knee. So I went up. Nobody was there. I said, sir, 5 minutes. Yeah, sit down. I said, sir, yesterday you said these books, there is nothing in them, throw them into the sea. And today you said, I haven't read any of them. I said, sir, this is a contradiction. You can't say this. If you have not read them, you wouldn't know what is in them, right? I mean, it's so simple. You know what he said? Sir, I don't need this. I don't need any of this. I said, that's a different matter. You don't need any of that. I understand. Maybe you don't need. But there are others who might. So, and when you speak, people take everything as gospel truth. So you have to be careful about this. I can say something and escape, but you can't. You have to think. And I'm saying this, I'm just showing you the humility which is also in him, like his holiness. You know, the reaction could have easily been, shut up, what do you know? I was a young man, I had nobody. And he was like, do you know the reaction? He said, you're right, sir. I think I should think before I speak. These are the distinguishing marks of a person who has gone up on the spiritual path. You know? There is a species of people called Krishnamurtites. They would be offended, but he was not. Now we come to another established order, like the Ramakrishna Mission. I met two of their stalwart Swamis of the Ramakrishna Mission. One was Swami Ranganathananda, who has spoken a lot, written a lot on the Upanishads. When I first went to join, because Babaji told me to go and spend some time in the Ramakrishna Mission. I said, how? He said, go and apply. So, and when I joined, and I was in Belumat for some time, Swami Ranganathananda came visiting. He was not the president then. I remember him as a tall, thin, austere-looking man with a Brother typewriter in his hand, because wherever he went, he used to write. And he called me home, or called me to his room one day, and he said, I need to talk to you. And then he said, from Kerala? I said, yes. Then he spoke in Malayalam. And he said, you know, don't be under any illusion that you have come to an ashram so everybody is a saint. No. this is a small community. So when there's a small community, there'll be politics, there'll be groups, there's everything here. Please don't think you're in heaven where you're going. But if you want, all facilities for you are also there. It's for you to choose. You want to develop or you want to join the groups. Stay away. If you have any doubts, talk to the older monks who run the order. Don't get caught up in this thing. I thought that was a very profound thing to say to a young man who has just joined. Okay. Then about not distinguishing between outward expressions of religion. The vice president of the Ramakrishna Order, Swami Tapasyananda, I had known him from high school. When I was in school in Trivandrum, he was heading the ashram there. And a wonderful man. I'd studied a lot from him. Many years later, in 83, he was living in Chennai in the ashram. He was already the vice president. Now, you know, in the Ramakrishna Mission, I don't know how many people are familiar here, apart from the general teachings and all that, there is an initiation. You have to be initiated. And the rule is, or was, that only the president of the Ramakrishna Mission, who sits in Belur Math, and who is supposed to have supposed to be linked to Swami Vivekananda himself and to Thakur, which is Ramakrishna Parama. They are the only people authorized to give initiation. It's basically a simple mantra, but much more important is the link that is established. Oh, in Buddhist terms, you can say empowerment. You can go and read any book and stand on your head and practice anything you like, but without an empowerment, it's not possible. So it's like similar. So they have an initiation. So I had spent years in different parts of the Ramakrishna Mission, but I had not taken initiation. For some reason, it didn't work. I mean, when I went once and then something happened, I had to be posted out and so on and so on. I knew some very senior monk. I knew the president, who was a great man, but at that time I couldn't get an initiation. So anyway, in 1983, I went to the Mylapore Ramakrishna Mission and I found that Swami Tapasyananda had become the vice president. So I went to see him. He asked me, "You've not been initiated, right?" "No." I said, "No, Swamiji, I have not been." I said, "What to do? You know, if I could have got initiation, I would have thought you should initiate me. But then unfortunately in the Ramakrishna Mission only the president can." He said, "Who said? The rule has just been changed, I can initiate." Apparently a month before they changed the rule and said the vice president can also initiate. So I said, "Now what to do?" He said, "Come in 3 days, Guru Purnima, I'm going to give you the mantra." I was thrilled beyond measure. I didn't expect, you know. And then he said something very interesting after, since he knew me from childhood. He knows my background, he knows everything. So he suddenly asked me, "Do you pray 5 times a day? I said, "No, I haven't for ages." "No." I said, "So why do you ask, Swamiji?" "Because I pray 5 times a day. It's very good exercise." You see, this is the mind, an expanded mind. So I have met so many people like this. I have met the people who belong to complete dualism, like the Madhvas. So it doesn't matter. I mean, these are different strands. The most important thing I understand, as much as I know, is that you should be sincerely seeking something and accept nothing other than the best. And two, that to seek first you need to follow rules and regulations and develop a compassionate mind. I don't think the mind can be purified by sitting for an hour quietly or 10 hours or half a minute. Well, you can become aware of your mind, of course, mindfulness. But you have to practically act in a kind way, not just theorize about that. In fact, among the Jains, ahimsa is a physical act, it's not a philosophy. Ahimsa, paramo dharma, they say the greatest dharma is non-violence. The reason Mahavira said, I'm not a Jain, please. Mahavira said, every living being loves its his life, his or her life. Every living being. And you have no right to take it. The moment you begin to think this way, you have to become, you can't help being kind. This kindness, ahimsa, take. Now that is Jain, okay? The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, where there is not even a God mentioned, there is no Ishwara, nothing is mentioned. What is yoga? Yoga is chitta vritti nirodha. The stopping of the clearing of the distractions of the mind stuff is yoga. This is the definition of Patanjali. So what is the first rule to be followed? Ahimsa. And the rules and regulations which are called, I hope you all know that yoga is called Ashtanga Yoga in its orthodox sense of the term in Patanjali. This reminds me, in Wisconsin once I went to address an Ashtanga Yoga circle. So I thought to open we should ask a question. So I said, I'm sure you know who's the founder of Ashtanga Yoga? They said, yes. I said, who? They said, B.K. Iyengar. I said, it was Patanjali, I don't know if I'm wrong. So, well, he was a great teacher, there's no question about that. So, even in yoga, in practice, in Sankhya, in yoga, in all modes of philosophy, you may say that you cannot dissolve when there is only the Supreme Being, non-dual. You may say, well, I can merge with the Supreme Being, Vishishtadvaita. You may say, Supreme Being is always there, all I can see is a reflection of the Supreme Being. But everybody agrees that the mind has to be purified. Everybody agrees that you have to evolve. Everybody agrees that you have to become less selfish. Everybody agrees that you shouldn't harm others. This is common. After that, when your mind is purified, you can decide. Babaji, once a person came to Babaji, my guru Babaji, Maheshwaranath Babaji, and he was a Vaishnavite. You know how the orthodox Vaishnavites, like ISKCON for instance, is, and here, and everywhere. So he came and he said, Babaji, I know you are a great being and so on, great person, but according to you, who is the Supreme God, Vishnu or Shiva? So, stunning question to ask. He said, there is only one Supreme Reality. You may call him Mahavishnu, somebody may call Shiva, it doesn't matter. He said, no. I believe that the Supreme Reality is Sriman Narayana Mahavishnu. Babaji said, okay. He said, at the moment, what is your situation? He said, I'm an aspirant, I want to have a darshan of the Lord. Okay. So what do you see right now? He said, I see the feet of the Lord. I said, good, you can see the feet of the Lord. All right. So finally, when you develop and when you see the head, then you can decide if the mark is this way or this way. why are you discussing this now? So the most important thing is that, right? To develop, to move forward. Sorry, I took more time than the question.
There's many questions, but the last one before we'll pass out dinner and then continue the Q&A from everyone else. At one point, so your life has this quality of an untiring mind, that you're sort of, you continue to serve, even at the age of 68, to walk and to even think of that. What is it that gives you, in your autobiography, you had this moment, this experience, where you heard this inner voice said, follow the bodhisattva path. And the bodhisattva path, of course, is the path where you forsake your own liberation for the sake of helping others. And so I was wondering if you can share a little bit about your understanding of the bodhisattva path of service and how that perhaps led to the walk. I mean, that's a lot of questions in one, but maybe start with the bodhisattva and then some stories from the walk.
You know, when you say a bodhisattva, it means, you know, there are two distinctions in Mahayana. The Sutrayana, the Buddhists, which is the, they say they are the originals. The Sutrayana Buddhists, also called the Theravada, don't have a concept of a bodhisattva. When one attains perfection and becomes an arhat, arhant means perfected being. One who has touched nirvana is called an arhant. Even the Jain's prayer is namo arhantanam. You see? So, the bodhisattva concept is that one has crossed over, almost. One foot is on the other side of the border. The other is here. It's not as if you haven't. Not that you have given up that. It is there, because with that without that basis, it's a little tricky. Without that basis, you cannot do selfless work. Not possible. So one foot is there. What the Buddhist scriptures talk is tadyatha gathagathe paragathe parasamgathe bodhisvaha. One who has crossed on the other shore is not fully crossed. He hesitates. He says, my God, this, and there are so many people suffering. Let me go back and take a few with me. At least. And the compassion also comes if you read the teachings of the bodhisattvas, that the bodhisattva says, at some point or the other, every living being could have been in my past birth my mother. At some point. So may I feel the thankfulness for looking after me. And take them also to nirvana. This is... So, when such people decide to kind of keep their complete, total nirvana in a kind of a closed door with the key and decide to do work. Now that work, you never lose energy. How can you lose energy? Because you are working from the source of all energy. It's not as if you're giving away something and it is exhausted. If I have 10 pens and I give away, when I come to the 10th one, I would hesitate, oh, there's only one left. But in this particular discussion we are having about, there's no such thing. There's nothing to hold on. You get what I mean? So therefore, since there is hardly any self-centeredness, there is a little bit, of course, still the human body is there. But since there's hardly any self-centeredness, there is no loss of energy. There is no loss of... I won't say loss of energy, there is no loss of vitality. It's still quite okay. I told you I'm 68. The body is 68. If I had spent maybe more energy trying to keep the body young, it could have been younger. But that's not the main thing in this path, right? But the very fact that something has been touched keeps the body energetic, if not completely young. There's a lot of energy which is not dependent on food, for instance. And I think every single human being can be that way. We need to just cut out our selfishness a little bit. Thoda sa. Every day think of yourself, but sometimes also think of others, at least to start with. So that's why I'm very happy. I was very thrilled to hear that you call this service space. Because service space, according to me, is sacred space. And in that space, Akasha, all the energies are concentrated.
Can you share a little bit about the walk that you just did last year? And maybe what was one core lesson that stands out? Because he walked for thousands of miles across India and met with tens of thousands, if not more, from across so many different interfaith backgrounds.
This walk actually started in the Himalayas many, many years ago. And one day Babaji suddenly turned to me and said, after some time you'll have to walk from Kanyakumari to Kashmir. I said, Babaji, why should I walk from Kanyakumari? What for? I said, I'll walk with you. Wherever you go, I'll come with you. Why should I go and walk from... He said, look, you have to do it. It's part of your work. So I said, but I don't want to do it. He said, it's part of you. Who wants to go, you know? It's not the physical tiredness that I was worried. I said, but what purpose of walking? And then the second sentence he said was worst. He said, there'll be hundreds of people walking with you. Then I said, no. I can't. Because I'm sitting here and talking to you. Basically, I love to be alone. Honestly. It's not happening nowadays. But I said to Babaji, I don't want to do this. I can't do this. Then he asked me a very important, pertinent question. He said, last year when you first came to see me, I asked you, what do you think of yourself in relation to me? It's all in Hindi, of course. It sounds more interesting in Hindi. So I said, "Haan, Babaji, yes, you did ask me." And what did you reply? I said, "Humne kaha ki hum aapka kutta hai. Main aapka kutta hoon, aisa maine kaha." I said, "I am your dog, your puppy." He said, "You sit and talk and I sit down and listen." So I said, "I'm your dog. You said that?" I said, "Yes." And then, what did I say? I thought about it. I said, "Yeah, you said you may be my puppy, but don't shake your tail too much. Did I say that?" I said, "Yes, Baba." Then he said, "Don't shake your tail. Do as I said." So, it was in my mind. And I just couldn't bring myself to do it for so many years, decades. But it was inside my mind, eating me up, saying that you haven't done what you said you would do at some point. So when I turned 66, I said to myself, if you don't do it now, you'll probably break Babaji's promise. And you know what happens. You'll probably come back and keep walking all your life. So, no, true. I'm very worried about that myself. So I told him, so I said to myself, I think we should do it now. And it started in a very strange way. I said to some friends of ours, look, I'm thinking of walking from Kanyakumari to Kashmir because I want to get people together. People are split in the name of religion, caste, creed, community, ideology. So let's get them together. Basically, we are human beings, right? Let's keep that. I want to do this. I'm going to walk. So I actually thought that he would say, are you crazy? But he said, I'll walk with you. So when I heard this, a very responsible man who retired as the chief of police in Karnataka, I really thought he's going to say, you're a madman. He said, I'll also hum bhi aapke saath chali. And within a few months, maybe 1 year, so many people came together and said, we are with you. We are walking with you. Then I wanted to make sure if there's going to be a problem from the political side. So I went and met everybody from all ideologies, all political parties, including the present Prime Minister. He was just about to be Prime Minister then. So everybody agreed that it's a wonderful idea. Somebody should do it, they said. Said, somebody should do it. I said, let me be the scapegoat. So this is how the idea originated, and then so many young people worked so hard, going ahead, walking, rekeying, finding out where to stop, what to do, the whole, it was a large thing, you know, big, what do you call it, a marathon. And then many people joined. I can tell you, there are people sitting here who walked with me. There are people sitting here who some walked throughout. They shut their houses and came out. Some left their poor husband's home and walked. And some, like Matthew and Christine, were with me, I think, 3/4 of the walk or more. In between, they had to come back to the United States and go back. So there were many people. And what we noticed in this walk is that basically human nature is good. As long as it is not manipulated by vested interests, human nature is good. And especially so in the villages. And fortunately, 70% of the population of India lives still in the village. It's the urbanite who creates most problems. And left to themselves, they want peace and cooperation. They're good people. Well, we also, you know, it was such a hectic schedule. I had to start in the morning. I'm not blaming anybody. I had to start living my. Had to start in the morning at 6 o'clock, when it was not winter. I mean, generally 6 o'clock, because afterwards it get warm. It's difficult to walk, so we started at 6, and walked, stopped for breakfast on the way if something would be provided. One thing I must tell you, your home state is the best as far as food is concerned. There was no dearth of food. Everywhere they said, "Aye, aye, aye." So we then from breakfast we would relax a bit and start walking again. By 11 o'clock we would have finished the walk. 11:30, sometimes 12. And then wherever I stopped, I had to talk. Talk. Okay, just say a few words, please. So, that is after you have fought off the garlands, you know. You can see some pictures where I can't breathe. In Madhya Pradesh. So, anyway. So then, and in fact, many people didn't even know who was coming. They heard previous night somebody is walking for... Come on, everybody join. Temples, mosques, gurudwaras, churches. There was no place where we weren't invited inside. This is India, please. We were invited inside. And wherever there was a Buddhist monastery, the monks walked with us. In fact, when we came to Pathankot, we had at least, how many monks? 100?
More than 100
young Buddhist monks from the Kagyu order. Walking with us from the Sarboling Monastery in Pathankot is close by, you know, because my good friend Thai Sithu Rinpoche was very particular that they should walk with me. I said, fine, great. So we walked. So wherever we went, so while we, I think, and then in the evening, then you take some rest after lunch, in the evening you have to go somewhere. people say, speak. So all the time I started speaking, as planting the seeds of harmony, bringing people together. So even though we have planted the seeds, they need a lot of follow-up action, looking after before they can sprout. No seed sprouts in 2 days, right? It takes time to become a tree. But more than that, more than what we gave, I think what we gained is a lot of knowledge and experience and understanding about the common man in India. And I would say, before I started, it appeared that the future of peace is bleak, but when I finished, I have full hope.
That's a perfect intermission point.
Thank you.
To be continued. What we're going to do is just take a moment of silence and pass the food around. And I
won't eat anything.
Oh, good. I was hoping
have
if
something
I...
something to drink.
Yes, there's water there. I always get worried that if I keep him from food, maybe next lifetime is going to come back to me, right? So, but what we're going to do is just pass the food out, so everyone just stay exactly where you are. And it's going to be a many-to-many exercise. So just take a plate, pass it to the person next to you. And in 2 minutes, everyone will have a plate.
Everybody's eating.
We're also grateful. We had so many RSVPs, way more than even that we could fit into this room. And so we are live streaming this as well.
In fact, you can move a little forward.
No, it's okay. We want to give you room.
I don't have any communicable disease. Except a good one.
Compassion. This food, we'll do a prayer before you start eating. We'll do a collective moment of silence, so don't start yet, including you. That's good. This food, yesterday, all these people came and they volunteered to chop. Oh. And, you know, so this is a very much an offering from the community.
Oh, wonderful.
And you know how beautiful things happen. One man came to volunteer and to chop. He's not even here today. And he says, you know, just as we were doing a circle of sharing, we were like, are you coming from a retreat? And he says, I've actually been in a 5-month meditation retreat. And I opened my cell phone and it said, do you want to come veggie chopping? That was the first email. And he says, so I'm here. So you never know the loving kindness of so many people, their cultivation and their merits are in all these things that we have. So thank you to all the people that were here yesterday, and thank you to all the forces that make it happen. Certainly including my mom and dad that are always doing small acts with great love.
Where's your dad?
He's there somewhere in the... Oh, my dad is over there. And my mom is invisible. Until food is done, my mom will be invisible.
Mom.
Yes. Is there a prayer that we can... that you can just... something short around food?
You can chant Sahana over too.
Yeah,
otherwise, right. You'll have to chant all the entire 15th chapter of the Gita, which is... No, sorry. There is a beautiful prayer from the Gita, just one sloka.
Maybe you can translate also.
Yeah, it means Brahmarpanam Brahma Havir Brahma Agno Brahmana Hutam Brahma Ivate Nagandavyam Brahma Karma Samadhina, which means everything is Brahman, the Supreme. How do you start it? Brahma Arpanam, that giving in the sacrifice, what you offer is Brahman. Brahma Havir, the one who performs, is also the Brahman. Brahma Agnav, the Agni, is also Brahman. Brahmana Hutam, what you offer in, is also Brahman. Brahma Ivatena Gandhavyam, all the things that is put in into the sacrificial fire is Brahman. Brahma karma samadhina, even the act of performing is Brahman. Isn't it so beautiful?
Shall we take a moment of silence?
Sure. had so many interesting experiences. And one of them, people who live in India would understand this a little better than others this, in this context. We were walking in Delhi, in some between New Delhi and Old Delhi. And then the first place we went for a cup of tea was on request from a mosque, which also ran a madrasa, a school. So there was this young man with a white pagdi on his head, the teacher, and he's also the imam of the mosque, the priest, the one who leads the prayer. So he invited us in, and he gave a small little talk on how we are all basically human beings and so on, trying to keep out things which would not go with what we were doing. And it was a good attempt. And there were these little boys who were there, and he introduced them to us, and then we said thank you, and I spoke to them. And I was about to go, he said, no, we have asked for tea, please have tea. So we all had tea. Then while we were leaving, he said, where is your next stop? So I said, 2 kilometers after this, we are stopping at a Gurudwara. You know what's a Gurudwara? It's a Sikh, the holy place of the Sikhs. I said, we are going to the Gurudwara. So first he said, maybe we should get these children also to go there. Then he changed his mind and he said, can I also come there to the Gurudwara? So I said, of course you can come, I'll take you. So we had already talked to the Prabandhak committee and so on, and there were people waiting to welcome us. So we went there, and I introduced him. You know, in Gurudwaras, all men should cover their heads. That's the rule. Either you should have a turban or you should put a cloth at least, and all women also. So we went in, and this guy could go in straight because already his head was covered. He had a turban on anyway. So I introduced him to the president of that particular society. This is the Maulvi Sahab from the mosque. He said, yeah, I know the mosque, but he's never come. He said, "Mai bhi pehle baar aa raha hun, first time I'm coming." So he said, that's fine. So they welcomed him inside. And they said, aye. So we sat down, and they did a reading from the Granth Sahib. They call it Shabad. So they read. It so happened. It has happened to us many times during the walk in Gurudwaras. It so happened that they opened that particular section, which started like this. If you know Hindi, Urdu, I'll translate. It is from the holy book of the Sikhs. Okay? It started like this. Awwal Allah Noor Ughaye Khudrat Ke Sab Bande. So the Maulvi leaned forward and asked, leaned to the side and asked me, are they reading the Quran? I said, no. Because he heard Allah. So it said that first God created the light, and from the light came all the Bande, all the living beings. But when it was read out, Awwal Allah Noor Ughaye, he asked me, ye Quran pad rahe hain kya, Quran Sharif? I said, nahi, ye Gur Granth Sahib pad rahe. Ignorance. So I explained to him, look, the Sikh religion, Guru Nanak, was attempting to bring people together. In fact, there is a place in Punjab beyond Jalandhar. I forget the name of the place, but there's a small Gurudwara and there's a river there. Recently it was cleaned up by somebody. And there's a little place where Guru Nanak ji sat and did a lot of meditation and things before he became well known. And it is said that he went into the river for a bath, and for 3 days he was not seen, so people thought he had drowned. So after 3 days he came out from that side. And the first thing he uttered was, there is no Hindu and Musalman, there are only human beings. So there are such things. This is our tradition. This were some of the interesting incidents we had. We met a wonderful man called Sant Khinchewal, who is a Sardar, but he belongs to the Udasi sect. And he is responsible for cleaning up most of the waterways and rivers in that area and planting of trees. Wherever he goes, he plants thousands of trees. And when there is somewhere water is blocked and the water is not flowing, he himself gets into it and starts doing so. Everybody joins. Interesting man. I spent some time with him. We had food there. He came. And then for a pleasure, he took me on his little motorboat throughout the river. He said, "Let me take you." Said, "But he's a huge man." Beri Sahab.
That's great. If you have a question, this is a good time. And if you've already had an occasion to ask him questions, we'll leave it to people who are kind of meeting him for the first time. So we'll prioritize that. And since for the sake of live streaming, we need to pass the mic. So, and if you want seconds, look for that woman and flag her. And there's seconds, thirds, you know, my mom's house, and there's never a shortage of food.
So honored to be in your presence, Sriyam. I just wanted to see if you could elaborate on the purification of mind. What does it involve, and how does one achieve a pure mind?
There's an easy question.
Most difficult. You know, you're right, it's easier said than done. But there are ways and means. All the great teachers from time immemorial have said that there are two strands which have to come together in one's spiritual progress for purifying the mind. One is how we live in this world, very important. And the other is what do we do internally. Both things are there. They have to go side by side. You cannot say that I will lead as selfish a life as I want, and every morning, every evening at 7 I would be in the bar, and that I will watch TV all I like, and I won't care for my neighbor who is ill, and then continue to meditate 2 hours every day and reach. Not possible. So there are two strands to this. Therefore, all the great teachers, including Patanjali, have said there are yama niyamas to be followed, and these are deliberately to be followed. Don't expect the mind to get purified by itself. You have to deliberately follow a way of life in which you cause least harm to others. In fact, if possible, give good rather than. And the key here is restrain. The key is restrain, control. Just before you speak, think, what am I going to say? Who am I going to say this to? Is this the right situation to say it? You see? So a certain amount of, you get good food, eat, but always restrain yourself and say, oh, maybe this could be shared by two.
But please help yourself to seconds.
So, not now. So everything there has to be a restraint. Everything in your daily life. If that kind of restraint is there, then slowly the mind also gets purified. Because when you say purify, it's not as if it is dirty and is getting purified. It's disturbed and distracted. It's ruffled. It's like a roller coaster ride. You know, our daily life. So if you can become less self-centered, if you can restrain, if you can control your sense organs, at least to a great extent, then automatically the mind begins to become purified. That's one. And then as a deliberate act of developing the mind, you should find some time every day to sit down quietly and interiorize your mind. This is also important. These have to go side by side. And whatever work you do in the outside world, do it with one-pointed attention. Otherwise, you cannot expect to be one-pointed when you sit 15 minutes a day. Because the mind follows habit. You have established a pattern. You cannot suddenly shift it in the evening. Right? So, this is so important. A yogi is one who drives when he drives and meditates when he meditates. Not meditates when he drives. If you danger to himself and to everybody on the road. A complete attention to what you are doing by itself is a meditation. You don't have to separate your meditation from this. So these are some, and the guidelines are there in all religious texts, in all teachings. You know, in Gujarat there was this great saint called Narsingh Mehta. He sang this Vaishnava song, beautiful song. Everybody knows that. In India, many people know that. Vaishnava janato tene kahiye ji, peed parai mane re, para dukhe upakar kare tohe mana abhiman na ani re. You know, it's so beautifully put for purifying the mind. He said, a Vaishnav means one who worships Guru, the God. Vaishnav, religious man, is one who thinks of others' problems as his own. Paradukhe. And helps them to get out of their problems with the complete humility that have done nothing. This is the way to purify them.
Will you share a little bit about meeting your teacher's teacher, Mahavatar Babaji?
Another soundbite question.
Now, in this life, now, I've only met him twice. Now, please don't ask me after this that I also want to meet him. What do? I don't know. Neither do I hold a license, nor I. Only this life I have met him only twice. And one was under very interesting circumstances. If you read my autobiography, it's already there. You know, my personal teacher, Maheshwarnath Babaji, told me that at some point you'll have to teach people Kriya Yoga. Kriya, which is our tradition. So I said, okay, so how? What are the qualifications? So he gave me a list of around 20 qualifications. Said if people have these qualities, then they are ready to learn Kriya. I said, Babaji, please, I cannot teach Kriya. This is not going to work. You can't have these kind of qualifications in the modern world. So you please find somebody else to teach Kriya. I didn't say that, but a kind of, please don't give me this responsibility. I said, with all due respects, I can't. So we were discussing this matter, and he was trying to cut down on one or two, and you know, kind of. And then he said, no, we shouldn't be, and things like that. Ye kaise ho sakta? Then we were walking on the banks of the Ganga on the other side of the town. From there, we walk up to Nilkanth. Nilkanth is a mountain, a hill up there. And in between the hill and Rishikesh, there's a Mauni Baba's cave, where whenever Babaji came to Rishikesh, we lived there. So we were actually going towards that direction, and I was telling him, no, this is not possible, please don't give me the. And then suddenly I saw somebody coming from the other side, and I can't describe to you, because it's quite a sight, I mean. somebody was coming with long hair and with just a small piece of cloth tied around here, no footwear, barefoot, very kind of a I don't know how to do it. I've not seen anybody like that. That's all I can say. It's coming the sight. And from the fact that it was confirmed to me that this is Babaji, because Maheshwarnath Ji, my personal guru, he prostrated before him. You know, Maheshwarnath Ji was a tall 6'4" man. Very thin and tall. I have never seen him bend his head before anybody. So when I saw him fall down, full prostrate, so it was confirmed to me that this is his teacher and who it was. So then he raised him up and he said, "Get up." And then he said to him, "I think you should listen to this young man." "Balak to theek hi keh raha hai, sun lo." And then he put his hand on me, and I can still feel it. And then he walked, he turned and started walking. So I wanted to run behind him and hold him. But Babaji stopped me. He said, "You can't do it, it's not possible." So I gave up. Even then I was so curious, because 5 minutes later, I walked up to the turning from where he disappeared to see if he was there or he had gone, but I couldn't find him. I didn't see him dematerialize before my eyes, nor did I see him materialize before. He came in from one corner and disappeared through the other. This is my one experience I had. And the other was when Maheshwarnath Babaji was dying. I mean, he was sleeping, giving up his body. Babaji came again and he spent some time, and he made both of us hold hands together and said, "Now part of his work is with you." These are the only two times. Both are memorable things for me.
And for those that don't have context, these are not just names that we throw around and say, "Hey, I met such and such." You have to be a fairly holy person. I feel that I know people will have questions, but I also want to be mindful. And he has shared so much of himself. So I'm wondering if we can do something in the spirit of gratitude to hold the sacred space and allow it to go beyond the four walls of this home. So however you are moved to close with any shlok or
yes,
after that we'll do some silence and the bell.
So I think if all of you or those who know can chant with me and then we can sit, chant shanti and sit quietly for a while before we wind up. This is a chant from again the Vedas. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadi Tamastu Mam Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om, that's it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Everyone is, I know, thinking, how can we help and support the movement? What would you recommend that we do as we want to carry?
I don't know really. You keep going together with everybody. We have an ancient sloka from the Rig Veda. Sangachatvam, Samvedatvam, Sambhomanam, Sijanatam. Walk together, move together, put your minds together and understand. You're already doing it, keep doing it. It's the greatest thing that one can do. Mm-hmm. I pray to Babaji that blessings.